May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and redeemer. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Paul speaks to the Greeks and hearkens to the notion of the eternal, the unchangingness of God. Greek culture likes the eternal, the abstract forever of Plato's forms. For Plato, we gathered here today all exist in the world of the becoming, pale shadows of the world of the forms, the world of eternal being. This world is the particular expression of the universal, and we are the expression of that as particulars. We are temporal and will pass away, and the eternal carries on. Jesus troubles this world of abstraction. Theologians call it the scandal of particularity, that one man enters the world and through him all are saved. That this man who lives and dies can then become eternal is a struggle to understand in a culture that believes the two don't mix. Universal and particular, eternal and material, oil and water. There is a lot of talk these days as to how we're a society that has largely gotten over the ideal of universals. That capital T truth is dead. But this blasé view doesn't do justice to the battleground that North American culture has become. We're fighting very hard these days. We're fighting very hard to find solid ground in a world where all has become vapor. We live in a culture that hungers for definition. Because so much is changing so quickly, and so much anxiety is created in the rush that has become our everyday life, there is a deep hunger for universals. What gives definition now that God is dead and all things have become permissible? In the wake of the great void of meaning, a lot of airtime is given to a nostalgic time, a time in the past where we had universals and when all things made sense. But even in our tradition, it has always been a fight to make things make sense. So I'm going to spend a bit of time talking a little bit about some of those fights, in the hopes that we can learn something about both the way our faith works and the way our culture doesn't. To begin with, the Christian tradition has always placed the emphasis upon the incarnation, that delicate space where the particular and the universal meet. It is not in abstraction, not, as we heard in Hebrews today, not in the love of money. Money is a human construct and meant to mediate things. It is a love for nothing. It is the only things that exist are the things that God has made. So the emphasis is in the relationship itself, the mutual love for your neighbor, where we meet the universal Christ in the particulars of the maimed, the lame, and the blind. Those who cannot pay you back. The lost souls that are meant to be swept up in the eternal love of God by the work of his church as it struggles through the particular time it finds itself in. If you think the Orthodox metaphor is the liturgy is the ship that floats upon the prayers of the people. And if you think of the church as the ship floating upon the sea of eternity, navigating in its particular times. Always working in universals, but with a particular compass. So the struggle is twofold, as the church struggles to understand itself and the culture it finds itself in. And the church has always been a battleground, as it has been from the beginning. And I shall name you Israel, which means he who struggles with God. The church is a community that struggles to know God in thought, word, and deed. The early writings of the church fathers are filled with sound and love as they refute the heresies of their day. To name a few, Adopticism, Apollinarianism, Arianism, Doceticism, they sort of break down like this. Jesus is mortal with a divine mind, Jesus wasn't divine, Jesus was a pure spiritual hologram that somehow ate with his disciples but did not inhale. Thank you. It's kind of fun to go through this list of heresies like this, as it really does show that there's nothing new under the sun. Any modern-day argument against Christianity that you'll find amongst new atheists was delivered better by old atheists 1,700 years ago. It's true. But this is all to say that theology, the struggle to understand God, wasn't a static thing. There are many factors and sects that were disputing the nature of God and Jesus, and much ink was spilt to iron out the kinks. During the Arian dispute, which argued that the Father and the Son were not co-eternal, it got so bad that the government had to get involved. Constantine called the Council of Nicaea because he was embarrassed by the infighting of the religion he had just joined. He wanted things settled, standardized, respectable. It probably didn't help matters much when, during a heated moment during the council, St. Nicholas punched Arius. That's Santa Claus. But it's not by mere coincidence that we're all gathered here today. People fought hard and long for the understanding of the triune God that we have. They thought very hard about their faith and about its implications and about the reality of their salvation. The philosopher Anna Arendt has said that thinking has a dual nature. It is both social and individual. It is a social project insofar that thought has to be batted back and forth to be challenged, if it is to be called, if it is to be worthy of the title thinking. But then it also must be reflective. It must be the lonely sparrow for a time, to hear the truth in what was reflected. The church fathers were the first monastics. They were in community and spent a lot of time alone. They invested themselves deeply in the question of what their faith was, its implications, how it works, what a Christian must do in the world. The definitions that were hammered out by our spiritual ancestors would serve the world well today if we consider the wisdom of them. The list of heresies that I have laid out, and I would venture to say that all heresies, are about maintaining a fine balance between the members of the Trinity. Jesus has to be all three, Father, Son, and Spirit, in order for our faith to hold together. When the scales tip in any of the direction for the three members, then the faith becomes something cooler. One of the telltale signs of the rise of Christian fascism is when the mortal Christ disappears and a more judging, all-knowing God comes to fill the void. A purely historical Jesus, absent of divinity, can reduce the faith to the rules of the land, lacking a theological imagination that seeks the salvation of the world. And a faith that is all about the spiritual and does not look at the world and paints the world just as an illusion does not seek to participate in the illusion, and the world passes them by. Always the Christian is called into the world to follow the example of Christ, to follow a God who enters the world, a God who calls us into a banquet with him, disguised as the poor, the crippled, the lame. This is what the church brings the world, not just an act of service, but an act of theology. Man does not live by bread alone. And if bread is the only thing the church gives, it too will become stale and crumble. If, however, we continue to serve flesh and blood, to remain true to the definitions given to us in the gift of Christ Jesus, then the church will have the right to offer hope to a world in desperate need of it.